Hi.
And welcome.
Welcome.
To Resting Witch Face, your one-stop haunt for all things spooky, bitchy, and more. I'm Bailey Bennett.
I'm Grant Jacoby.
Believe it or not.
We're still alive.
We're here.
Guys. Which this will only, what we're about to talk about is only going to make sense if you're listening to this in real time.
Mm-hmm.
If you are stumbling upon this in the year 2047, you're not going to understand
why. Oh my God. I hope not.
Yeah, well, long story short, Bailey and I have both decided to get incredibly ill, not at the same time, which prevents
But just
us.
Almost exactly at the same time.
Yeah, just like
right consecutively.
Yeah, overlapping just enough that we could not record.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't know about you, but I don't think like the sweet sounds of like sniffling and are going to be real cute entering your cerebellum.
And the thing is that we're not even lying. Like we both... It's not one of those things where we were like, we were so sick. It was like, this is how I keep describing how sick I was to people, was that on the Saturday night before we were supposed to record, I was so simultaneously tired but also ill that I had taken all of this like NyQuil, but I couldn't fall asleep. So I was just crying. Mm-hmm. I was just crying in bed because I wanted to sleep so badly, but I could not.
Why does that happen when you're sick? Like, cause I feel like the same way where it's like you take all of the cold medicine and then you just have these like weird lucid dreams where like
yes.
you're not actually sleeping. And then you like wake up and you're like praying for death and it's like 6 a.m. and you're like, well, guess I gotta go to work.
It's the absolute worst. It was a really trying time for us, and I'm sure it was for you guys as well. No, you guys have been so supportive, which has makes it so nice and easy for us.
Thank you guys for always, for being so great that when we do sometimes need to take like medical leave, that all the comments are basically just like, oh my God, like feel better guys.
Yeah.
Like, and it's just really sweet. And not that we're like, oh, phew, we can now go away for a while, but.
Right. No, not at all. So we really appreciate you guys putting up with us because you're the best fans in the world. The timing of this is a little unfortunate because we know that we've just let you down for a couple of weeks in a row, but we do have a little bit of an announcement that we've been planning for a while, and we were planning on doing it a couple weeks ago, and then all of this kind of happened, but we want to do it now.
Yeah.
And hopefully it's not a bad announcement.
I think it is a good announcement.
I think so too. Let's keep dancing around it like this.
Yeah. Who's going to say it first?
You say it.
We are starting a second podcast.
Yes.
A
new podcast.
Title still to be revealed. We're still working out some kinks in terms of making sure that it hasn't been used or that we feel really comfortable with it.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, basically, I mean, we're we're really excited about it. Sorry, we're nervous to tell you guys about this, but hopefully you're going to be excited. The unfortunate thing about it is it does mean that Resting Witch Face is going to go on hiatus for now.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish that that weren't the case, but realistically, as we've talked about many times, we both work full-time jobs and we love doing this podcast so much, but it is a lot of work. And it's not that we don't love this podcast. We love doing this podcast so much, but we're coming up on doing this podcast for 2 years.
2 years, bitch.
Which is crazy. And I don't think we ever thought it would last that long.
No, I thought it was gonna be like 2 weeks.
Right. Exactly. So and we're so thrilled to have built up the fan base that we have. So you guys, maybe some of you are thinking like, why would you try to switch that fan base over right now? But, it's really more about us having fun when we're doing this and us just hanging out and being friends and feeling like we're giving you the best, most fun and fresh content. And I think that we're just, feeling like we want to change.
I think that, in a perfect world, like, or if this were just like the Grant and Bailey podcast and we could talk about whatever we want, which is kind of what it is.
Yeah.
Maybe a different story. But, I think that we as creative human beings, like, want to curate a cohesive podcast that mm-hmm. feels like it's not just like rambling. And I think if we suddenly were like, mm-hmm. we're switching gears, it would be kind of a shock to the system, as opposed to being like, hey, like, it's been fun hanging out here, now come over here.
Yeah.
Should we actually say what the two podcasts is about?
Yeah. So, as you guys probably know, if you've been with us for a while, Grant and I are both extremely passionate about film and TV, and we love the entertainment world and we love pop culture, and we've really inserted that into this podcast mm-hmm. many times. You know, obviously we've done like a Scream episode and we've done a Buffy episode, and like we love talking about the world of entertainment, and that's something that we both would really like to explore more. Mm-hmm. So in our new podcast, we are going to be revisiting films from our adolescent and teenage years, focusing on kind of the 90s and 2000s classics that shaped us growing up. So think Cruel Intentions, Scream, Bring It On, Freaky Friday, all of these like crazy, probably bad mm-hmm. teenage films, just to name a few.
Yeah, so we fully acknowledge that a lot of these movies probably don't hold up and cannot be considered like good by today's standards, but that's kind of why we want to take a look at them. Mm-hmm. And we're going to go over every detail that we love and we love to hate. We'll discuss how these, again, I just said, how these films will hold up today, what modern movies and TV shows they might have influenced, and also, you know, just like check into like where our favorite teen stars are now. I mean, obviously, we give you active up-to-dates
yeah.
on like what Sarah Michelle Gellar is up to, but
absolutely.
Like, where's Jennifer Love Hewitt these days?
Yeah.
How about like Clea DuVall, like Josh Hartnett? Like, where are all these 90s heartthrobs?
Yes, because as I think we've talked about, one of both of our favorite hobbies is just kind of reading the trivia sections of movies, and that's, we're really just going to bring that to life mm-hmm. with this podcast. Don't worry. I will say that there is going to be a lot of teen horror in this podcast.
Yeah, there is.
So like I Know What You Did Last Summer, The Craft, Jennifer's Body, Hocus Pocus, all of these films are definitely at the top of our list. I'm going to say right now, Grant is going to have seen more of these than I have, because as you know, I came to horror a little bit later in life, but I truly can't wait.
Yeah, I can't wait for you to experience yeah. some of the real gems of mm-hmm. the late 90s, early 2000s. But also just to say, like, the format of the show will mm-hmm. still feel very, very familiar to our avid Wrestling Witch Face listeners. This new podcast will still have the same conversational, probably pretty poorly researched mm-hmm. feel that RWF does. And, you know, we'll still probably go on many a tangent and definitely swear too much. Uh-huh. And, you know, probably still have trouble pronouncing people's names.
So. Absolutely. Yeah. So the structure that we're kind of picturing is we'll be going over one film per week. We're obviously going to watch that film before the episode. Mm-hmm. What I think would be really fun is like before we watch the film to kind of write down some assumptions about how we think it's going to hold up, the memories that we have of it, or if we've never seen it before, kind of like the assumptions that we have based on its representation in pop culture, and then kind of go from there and just really dissect it in the most fun way.
Yeah. And I think that this also could hopefully open up a lot of more dialogue with you guys mm-hmm. in terms of your perceptions of the film and how it affected you growing up, how you perceive it today. Because mm-hmm. obviously there's a lot of subjectivity when it comes to true crime and ghost stories that we've been telling versus being like, these films exist like right in front of you. Like we can actually like, there's like tangible mm-hmm. evidence that we can pick apart.
Yeah, exactly. And again, you know, I know that you guys are here at least partially because of the witchy, spooky content that mm-hmm. we bring you. And we totally understand that. And that's something that we love a lot as well. But I do think, you know, we do struggle a little bit, especially if we're talking about like a really horrible murder or something super yeah. dark, where we really like to have fun with each other and we like to laugh a lot and we like to make fun of a lot of shit. And I think sometimes we're just like, you know what, it would be great if we had a little bit more of like a fun topic mm-hmm. to discuss together. So I'm hoping that you guys, hopefully you guys are here for us as much as you are for the content that we discuss. So it would mean the world to us if you would follow us on this journey and come along with us to our second podcast. Mm-hmm.
Which we will announce the name of soon.
Yeah.
And don't worry, this isn't happening next week or the mm-hmm. week after, just, you know, maybe the week after that.
Yeah.
Like so we're still gonna wrap some and tie up some loose ends of things we still wanted to talk about with this podcast. And mm-hmm. again, this is not saying like we're closing the coffin,
right?
Resting witch face.
Nice.
I think that I would love nothing more to have the potential to like kind of ping pong back between the two, mm-hmm. depending on, you know, our lives and our interests and how yeah. things go over at what is not named yet.
Yes. Podcast.
I almost said it.
Yeah. So just to give you guys an idea, I know that we're talking about, like, we're kind of talking in a lot of hypotheticals right now, but we do have a real plan in mind. So what you guys are going to get for the next couple weeks, obviously we're going to have our normal episode this week. You'll get a normal little bitch next week, which, spoiler alert, will be your stories. And the week after that, we're actually going to release the first episode of the new podcast, and we're going to release that here, and we're going to release that on the new podcast channel. So you'll get definitely more information then, and you'll get a little taste of what that's going to be like. And then we're going to finish out Resting Witch Face with probably a two-part episode the last week of October, the first week of November, and then we're going to kind of close out Resting Witch Face for now that time. And then the new podcast will take off officially at the start of 2020, but there will be a few kind of surprises that we'll release along the way. So when that does happen, we really would encourage you guys to subscribe to the new podcast. And I know we're not directing you to anything right now. We're just kind of giving you the information, but
just giving you a heads up that this is coming.
Yeah, this is all probably very confusing. Just stay tuned.
Yeah. But
it's going to be fun.
It's going to be fun. We just didn't want to sit on it for too long. Yeah. We also didn't want to be like, all right, this is now happening. Bye.
Right.
We wanted to kind of let it digest, marinate, and, you know, even get your thoughts and first impressions of things that doesn't exist yet.
Right. No, but like for real, like, please message us, email us, let us know how you feel about this whole thing, because we really do care about your opinions. And if you're mad and if you're sad, that's okay. You can let us know. But yeah, so basically nothing is going away until the beginning of November. So, you know, just enjoy. We're going to be doing Resting Witch Face for a little bit longer and maybe, mm-hmm. you know, down the road again as well. But
yeah, there's, at the end of the day, there's going to be no shortage of true crime mm-hmm. and ghost stories and spooky shit to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
But after 2 years of doing it, mm-hmm. sometimes, you know, I want to talk about some fucking 90s rom-coms.
Me
and
too.
How horrible they are.
I'm so excited, and we really hope you guys are too.
Yeah.
So that's...
Yeah,
that's the end of that spiel. Yeah. So sorry.
Let's get back to the content that you're really here for.
Yeah. Yeah. But we fully acknowledge that we've been gone for a long time. So we also haven't seen each other in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
So if you'll indulge us for a little bit longer, we kind of just want to catch up about some stuff and chat a little bit.
Yeah.
I know we both have some television that we would really love to discuss.
Yes. So Grant, which is me, finally got on the bandwagon that is Fleabag.
And thank God.
Thank God indeed.
I mean, truly, you can attest to the fact that I was absolutely bombarding you with the fact that you needed to watch the show.
You were, as was like the Emmys,
mm-hmm.
as was just like all of the pop culture zeitgeist. And I knew I would like it, but I was definitely hesitant because I was like, ugh, like when something's hyped up too much, like mm-hmm.
totally.
But nope, was not disappointed in the slightest.
I'm so glad.
In fact, like, cannot wait to watch it again.
It's one of the best things I've ever seen. I can really safely say that. I'm so thrilled that you loved it. If mm-hmm. anyone hasn't watched yet, I don't know how to compel you to do it, because it's two seasons. There's like six episodes that are like 30 minutes long each.
It's
really
so quick.
Really quick watch, but it is still just like you will not stop thinking about it for mm-hmm. so long afterwards. I mean, Phoebe Waller-Bridge is a true genius. It is a perfect show. Like mm-hmm. she created something so hilarious, but at the same time so deeply affecting.
Yeah, it's black humor at its finest, mm-hmm. where it's like it's so pitch dark.
Yes,
the things that like you'll be laughing at are so like, and it's something like that British sensibility mm-hmm. where it's just like really like cuts to the bone
mm-hmm.
where like you're laughing and then suddenly you're like, oh
yeah,
oh my God.
Yeah.
Like,
especially in the first season. The first season is definitely darker, and things take a little bit of a turn in the second season and get a lot more romantic and mm-hmm. nice and beautiful and like weirdly like spiritual and religious in a lot of ways. Like it is a journey to go on with her. But yeah, I'm so glad you're finally on the bandwagon. And again, you're going to love the second watch.
Yeah, I can't wait. I feel like it's fresh enough that I don't want to talk about mm-hmm. the spoiler aspects of it, because I think that actually the shock value was really, really important in my initial watch, which mm-hmm. was that there were a couple things I did predict, especially in the first season, mm-hmm. but they unfolded in such a captivating way mm-hmm. that I just like couldn't. I just was like beaming, just like truly just like grinning from ear to ear at like every episode.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so glad.
Yeah. And, you know, she, and by she, I mean, Phoebe Waller-Bridge has stated that she is done. Mm-hmm. I know Amazon is like, we'll produce as many more seasons as you want. Mm-hmm. And she's kind of like, nah, I feel like I told the story I need to tell.
Yeah.
Which I really respect.
Yeah.
It's heartbreaking mm-hmm. because especially because I'm like, I expected there to be a little bit more like, it wraps up perfectly, and yet I'm like, you just, they obviously could make
of
more.
Of course.
Like, there's so many more stories you could tell, mm-hmm. but I also really respect the notion of ending things when you're done with it.
Totally. I respect it so much. And it's also, like, for people who watched the first season of Fleabag when it actually came out, I believe it came out in 2016.
So there's a 3-year break between
right. seasons. So it was like, I think it was even kind of a surprise that a second season mm-hmm. even happened. So yeah. I think for me, I was like, this is great. Like I fully expected this to be the end of the story. And again, I really respect her for sticking to her guns about that.
What do you make of the fact, this isn't a spoiler, that mm-hmm. we never know her name?
I know. I think you almost forget that.
Well, most of the characters are not referred to by name. Only True. Her sister Claire mm-hmm. and her sister's husband are like the only two that have
that's true.
Names.
Yeah, and I don't necessarily know why that's the case. I think like it is a little bit of like these are kind of archetypal characters to a degree, like that like mother-in-law figure that Olivia Colman is doing incredible things with.
I wanted more of her in the second season. Oh, we didn't get enough of her at all.
I know. It is very fascinating that you never learn Phoebe Waller-Bridge, obviously, who wrote and created this series and stars in the series. She is Fleabag, but you mm-hmm. never learn her real name.
And they never even say the words Fleabag in the show.
So right.
It's not like it's like a nickname. It's not like...
Right. Well, I do think it has a little bit to do with like, she kind of has this reputation with people and she's, and people kind of like look at her the wrong way and think she's inappropriate and she's like too obsessed with sex and she mm-hmm. like doesn't say the right thing. And I think like she embodies that like a person who's a Fleabag, a person who's a dirtbag, a person who's just like not good. And I think it dehumanizes her a little bit that no one ever calls her by what her name actually is. Mm-hmm. And so I think the audience feels, out of everyone until the second season, I think the audience feels closest to her. Mm-hmm. Cause she, a lot of the show is about her talking to camera or like breaking the fourth wall in the most brilliant way.
It's done. The level of like nuance and acting capabilities that it makes, mm-hmm. it takes to be so simultaneously in a scene mm-hmm. and then to break the fourth wall. And it's never like this, like, it's like mm-hmm. these brief moments.
Yeah.
Just like, oh, it's
brilliant.
Stunning.
Absolutely.
It's not like The Office. I mean, don't get wrong. Love The Office when they break the fourth wall, but
right.
that's so much more of like,
it's not in a goofy way at all. It's like really integral to understanding the emotions of the scene. I mean, we could gush about it forever, but
go watch it. If you haven't watched it, go watch it.
Yeah.
If you have, watch it again.
Yeah.
And
Yeah. Okay. Indulge us for a little bit longer because I have another show that I want to talk about, which is going to also lead us into our badass bitches this week. But Grant, I know that you haven't watched yet, but you're familiar with the story of the new Netflix limited series Unbelievable, mm-hmm. I actually watched this over the weekend that I was very sick. So I was just like in here in my apartment, just having a real emotional roller coaster of a time. But this show affected me so much. For those of you who don't know, it is a show about two detectives. It's based on real events. So I do want to say that the two detectives that it's based on are Stacey Galbraith and Edna Hendershot are their real names. And there are these two incredible female detectives who linked up a few years ago to investigate this serial rapist. And a lot of what the show kind of tackles is the fact that what we've talked about before, that a lot of these like police departments and detectives just don't really communicate with each other. So they often don't put the pieces together that the person that they're investigating might actually be the same person that another precinct is investigating. So without revealing too much, basically the story revolves around a young woman who's played by Caitlin Dever, who you might know from Booksmart. She's brilliant in this. And the show starts with her and her unfortunately experiencing a rape in her home. And an investigator is brought in to help with this. And you kind of, that whole first episode is you seeing the investigation unfold, the way that she's treated, the way that her story is treated. And I will say I basically cried the whole time. So it's definitely hard to watch. And then in the second episode is when Merritt Weaver's character comes in, and she plays Stacy. So Merritt Weaver comes in and is helping out another rape victim. And you kind of just, you see how she treats the situation versus how, truthfully, a male detective treated the situation in the first episode. And the contrast is so stark that it really upset me, because I just couldn't stop thinking about the fact that so many women who go through this don't have the experience that this incredibly talented and intelligent female detective brought to the situation. And, you know, the story kind of unfolds from there, but Merritt Weaver and Toni Collette play the two detectives, and they are brilliant in this series. I just can't say enough good things about it. They're such strong and powerful women. They are doing so much for women who have been through this. So this week, I want to give a shout out to Merritt and Toni, but also to Stacy and Edna, who are the real heroes behind this story. Mm-hmm. And they cracked the case. I mean, there's no spoilers here. Like, they did it.
I've yet to see the TV show. I'm oddly looking forward to watching it. It feels weird to me.
No, I mean, it's so good.
But I did read the article that came out in the something. I don't know which newspaper. I
find out. Yeah, the whole story was based on this one very detailed article.
Yeah, which I read.
It was in ProPublica.
Yeah, and it's an amazing article. Obviously, it does have the spoilers of the case, but I actually, once I first saw the trailer for the show, I was like, I kind of want to like know the original source material. And I read it, and it was so simultaneously like empowering and like so heartbreaking. And I guess it's kind of a spoiler, but like, this case wouldn't be solved if it hadn't been for these women. And they got justice for not only the victim that is kind of the focal point of the series, but also so many others. And it's just so, simultaneously like amazing. It's like, wow, like they really did it. And also like the harsh reminder that like, fuck, like how many women have been ignored and have been, and men too, and non-gender conforming people who are sexually assaulted,
absolutely,
you know, and just aren't able to find justice because of societal sexism and just bullshit.
Yeah. So I guess we didn't say it. The series is called Unbelievable because Caitlin Dever's character is not believed when she is raped
by like everyone around her.
It's really sad how it unfolds, because it could happen to anyone. Like, it just seems like, you know what? That checks out, unfortunately. Like, I can see how this happened.
I know. That's why I'm so hesitant to watch. It's just to, like, I think go through that. But then it's like, worse to go through it in real life.
Absolutely. I think the show is very much like, it starts on this, on a very low point, and it is hard to get through that. And I'm sure very triggering for anyone who has gone through anything like that. But the longer you watch, the more powerful and empowering it is. And there is justice, and it's just so incredible to watch these two women work together and really like use the justice system as it should be used. I can't say enough about it. So
yeah, go check it out.
Yeah. If you've seen it, let us know. I would love to talk about it more. But yeah, I think that's all of the talking.
Yeah, that's a lot of okay. Yeah, thanks for listening. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe.
You guys put up with us for so much.
But we're, you know, we're still here, and we are ready to give you the spooky content that you were looking for.
Yes.
So I'm telling the story this week, and I went very off-brand for me.
Okay.
Which is I wanted to find, like, a good ghost story, and just, like, a solid, like, old-timey haunted house.
Mm.
And so the name of the story kind of gives it away, but I also think it's, like, the funniest thing that I could ever think of.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to be telling you about the Footless Ghost of Falls Road.
Oh, amazing. This, I can't, I'm buckling in.
So come along with me to Benton, Maine.
I will.
Before I tell the story, I got this information not from Wikipedia.
What?
Nothing is about this on Wikipedia. So I got it from the Press Herald. And, ooh.
Oh, sorry. That's Wikipedia coming back to haunt
me. Yeah, woo. From Press Herald and an amazing article on centralmaine.com by Matt Hongoltz Hetling.
Yes, Matt.
So I actually found this story because I just started Googling. First, I started Googling Haunted New England. Because I wanted to, like, let's get something close to home.
Mm-hmm.
And then I realized, like, we'd done a lot of the big haunted houses in New England. I know that Amityville is New York, but I'm including the tri-state area in this. And we did Haunted New Jersey. Mm-hmm. We did Fall River with Lizzie Borden. So I was like, okay, like, where else? And I was like, oh, Maine is a wonderful place. I lived there for a summer, and I've always been obsessed with that. And I was like, it's, like, all just, like, forests and moose and log cabins. I was like, there has to be some crazy shit that happened up there.
There better be.
So this story takes place, as I mentioned, in Benton, Maine on Falls Road.
Mm-hmm.
So upon moving into this house on Falls Road in 1964, the Linnell family knew something was off.
Yes.
Most of the experiences were very standard haunted house fare. Footsteps were heard traveling up and down the stairs. The sounds of coming from a music box could be heard playing, although no music box could be found. They often would smell the scent of carnations or cigars that would waft through the room with no apparent source. And also a shadowy figure could be seen at the top of the stairs.
Great.
Just like, I feel like that is the
quintessential,
perfect, like, chef's kiss type of haunting that I would like to experience. Just like smelling, like smelling flowers and be like, ooh, where's that coming from? But like, ooh, like, is that Beethoven playing?
Do we know anything about, like, who is in the family? Like, is there kids?
Yes. So, yes, it's like a...
You're going to get into that?
I'm going to get into it, but that I don't really know, like, the exact lineage. But it definitely is, like, parents and some siblings, and a lot of it involves, like, some, like, young cousins.
Okay.
So dozens of times the Linnell said, and I'm pretty sure the name Linnell has been changed for this story. I don't think that's their actual name. So dozens of times the family said that their dog named Baby, which is like my favorite name for an animal. Fun fact, Carol Radswell of New York's Housewives fame, all of her pets' names are Baby.
All of them?
Yeah, she had a dog named Baby, then she got a cat named Baby. Just like, why not? Okay. So their dog Baby would bark at an apparent intruder that no one else would see. Also, classic. Haunted house fair. But naturally, that isn't the end of the story, and the incidents began to escalate.
Mm-hmm.
So in January 1967, a visiting cousin named Joseph McMullen, who was three, was, aww, I know, baby, was put down alone in a room for a nap.
I just love picturing, like, when you said visiting cousin, I obviously assumed, like, an adult, like, showing, like, up
Joseph,
with a briefcase.
I know, I didn't see, like, Joseph a baby with a briefcase. That'd be so cute.
Oh, but a baby named Joseph?
Yeah.
Who just arrives at your doorstep?
You're like, hi, do you have time to talk about your Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ? So his sisters, who were in the sewing room next door, rushed in when they heard him screaming. And the young boy was quoted as saying, I don't like that man, mummy. Ugh. I don't like that man in there.
Oh, of course. Of course you said that, Joseph.
During the same visit, one of his sisters, 12-year-old Mary, walked into the room. And when she heard an exacerbated sigh coming from a wicker chair.
That chair had it.
She said that the chair groaned as if someone was in it. She then heard footsteps as though an invisible presence had got up and walked out of the room, sounding like one foot was being dragged as it walked.
Oh, Yes. Yeah, when you said footsteps before, I was like, doesn't check out with the name of the story, but let's see.
There's at least one foot involved.
Okay.
And in 1969, the children said that a bare footprint larger than anyone who lived in the house was found in the dust beneath a trunk.
Oh, beneath a trunk? Like it had been covered up?
I guess so. 18-year-old Alan Linnell, who lived in the house, reported laying terrified in bed one night as he felt a presence sit next to him on the bed, and then something cold touched his arm.
Ooh.
Yeah, see, that I wouldn't like. Like, no. I'm okay with the, like, there's maybe a ghost in another room, but, like, don't get into bed with me.
Well, that's the thing that's just too bad about these haunted houses is it's like they always escalate. It's like if it just started off with like some footprints and some music and like the smell of flowers, but it's like, why does it have to then get ugly and violent? It's like, I just want to have a friendly ghost presence just kind of around, not affecting me directly.
Yeah, not coming into my personal space, aka my bed.
Yeah.
Carol Linnell Sr., who was the patriarch of the family, was skeptical of his children's accounts, though he did eventually have two experiences himself. One in which he heard glass breaking, and another when he was woken by a rhythmic thumping coming from the second floor.
Mm.
Regardless of the validity of these various claims, things came to a grisly head on August 15th, 1970, when, while renovating the dining room, the Linnells found a shriveled and mummified human foot.
No.
Along with some bones and a few corn cobs buried in the wall. Surprise!
Oh, no.
The bizarre
corn.
I know why.
Why it's corn?
The corn is never addressed.
Oh God!
But it was there.
Okay.
This bizarre and gruesome discovery sparked a lot of media attention, as well as natural questions of, you know, who might this foot belong to, and why was it left between two boards in the dining room wall?
I would love to know the answer.
Yeah, truly. According to newspaper accounts, Maine State pathologist Irving Goodoff sent the foot to a Boston lab for analysis, and the results indicated that it was amputated from a 5-month-old child in a surgical procedure around 1900.
No! Wait, so it was like a teeny foot?
Yeah. Like
did you also say teeth?
No, there was also some small bones found in the wall with the foot, but apparently those were determined to just belong to some sort of small animal.
Okay.
But the foot was human.
Okay. Can you imagine just receiving a foot at your lab?
Yeah, like, here you go.
Okay.
Tom Verde, who's an author of a 1998 book, wow, I can't talk, called Maine Ghosts and Legends, said, in quote, "In those times, it was not uncommon for people to preserve amputated limbs so they could later be buried together with the bodies. Was this ghostly inhabitant of their home a poor crippled child in search of his lost limb?"
Oh, God.
Due to census information, it has been reported that a doctor lived in the house around the time the foot was allegedly amputated. Some theorize that the foot could have been stolen from the doctor's surgery table and taken into the wall by a rat.
Ew.
Which is maybe why it, which would actually kind of check out, then maybe also why the corn cobs, like a rat just being like, dinner.
Oh God. Okay.
Could you imagine if you just like, first of all, A, seeing a rat in your house, B, that rat just like has like a foot in its mouth.
Oh my God. Okay. So it could be like, okay, he grabs the corn and the foot and then he goes into the wall and then gets stuck and then he dies there. So it's his bones that are found.
Maybe.
I mean, somehow that's less disturbing to me than if humans hid the foot in the wall with some corn.
Okay. I love corn. Others believe that the foot could be linked to an event in 1883 when a man shot himself in the Falls Road home when his daughter and her husband quarreled over the custody of a child, but none of this has been substantiated. Am I drunk right now?
Why can't I fucking talk?
In 1970, the National Enquirer reported about a visit to the home by...
Oh, the National Enquirer?
Yeah, the National Enquirer is getting involved, so now you know it's legit.
A respected publication. Go on.
So they reported that a psychic named Alex Tanis visited the home, who concluded that a woman had murdered her illegitimate son in the Falls Road house and hid his body in the walls.
Well, I feel like there's too many different accounts.
There is. Because, I mean...
But then where's the rest of his body?
Unclear. The rats ate it.
Okay, answer me.
Tanis taught Alan Linnell, who is the oldest son of the family, to do something called automatic writing. Have we talked about automatic writing on this podcast before?
Maybe like one time. I think we talked about it when we did that like psychic, maybe?
That sounds right.
Yeah.
But it's in which a spirit communicates through the writings of a living person.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not super familiar with it, but I know it's like... where you kind of like channel that energy and then the human vessel is like writes.
Yeah. If you can picture like, they like basically give you a piece of paper and a pen and you're just kind of like letting your hand move as it will.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm glad that we both are gesturing
because you can totally hear it heavily.
And by hear, I mean see it.
Okay.
Did you spike this coffee? What is wrong with me?
Bitch, I wish. Talk.
I know. That'd be nice. After using this technique, Linnell said that he made contact with the ghost of a woman identified by Tanist named Sally Flagg. Newspaper accounts at this time said that the last name matched that of Gershom Flagg, the man who actually built the house around 1767.
Okay.
Allegedly, Gershom Flagg was a sea captain who brought his mistress, Sally, to Benton and built her a house. For unknown reasons, perhaps that he was lost at sea or just ran off, he abandoned Sally. It is Tanis's, as well as others' theories, that the ghost might be Sally, her illegitimate child, or both.
Oh my, there's a lot going on.
There's a lot.
Okay, so it's like Sally had an illegitimate child who maybe had his foot amputated,
yes.
Or she maybe killed the child.
Yes.
And her husband left her, so now maybe both of them are haunting the house.
What's the opposite of a mistress? A master. No, ew.
That's what?
Like, it was, he was basically like, they were having this like affair and he like built her this house and then like ran, like disappeared.
Okay.
So she was kind of this like scorned woman,
okay.
Lover of the sea captain, and potentially either she's just haunting the house, potentially like she might have had a child and that child's haunting the house.
Yes.
Or maybe it's both of them just like.
Right. But to be clear, a mummified baby foot was found.
Yes. That is the only concrete evidence we're talking about. Everything else is just conjecture.
Great.
Because why not?
Mm-hmm.
On Halloween night in 1977, a seance was conducted in the Falls Road home, led by a pastor named Bernice Damon and about a dozen attendees. During the seance, Damon and a few others said they made contact with the spirit of a man who in life had thrown a baby down the stairs while drinking. According to them, when they called the spirit a drunkard, a candle would flicker.
Oh, okay.
Like, also maybe don't antagonize the spirit.
No.
The surviving members of the Linnell family have not made public statements about the home in decades. However, they apparently still do stick to their story about their experiences in the home and that whatever it was very real to them.
Mm-hmm.
Other occupants in the house are split on whether it holds anything unusual. Priscilla Buzzell, B-U-Z-Z-E-L-L.
Okay.
Who's now 94, lived in the house for 17 years before she sold it to the Linnells in 1964. She believes in life on the other side, but also believes that there are earthly explanations for anything she's ever heard in the house. She's quoted as saying, "Every old house has groans and cracks and shadows and trees."
Of course.
Every house has trees.
Yep. Okay.
We never saw anything unusual while we were there. Furthermore, in 1977, a relative of Priscilla, who also used to live in the house, wrote that over more than 30 years of occupancy by that, by about 20 family members within the Buzzell family, that no spirits ever uttered a word and suggested that the ghost stories were the product of overactive imaginations. Classic.
Mm-hmm, of course.
However, the house's most recent reported owner as the time of this publication of the story, which was written in 2013, so I don't know if this is still the current occupant, she has a very different story.
Oh.
So, originally from good old Salem, Massachusetts.
Hell yes, I love her already.
Marty Goliath has lived in the house since 2000. So she was there for at least 13 years.
You know, she heard the story and was like, I'm moving in.
Oh, seriously.
When can I sign?
So she's quoted saying, "Most everybody lives in a haunted house in Salem, and being a good Salem girl, I'm very happy to have a ghost here." Like a woman after my own heart.
Oh my God.
Goliath had a ghost experience on her very first day in the house before she'd even heard of the Linnells, their ghosts, or the foot found in the wall.
Oh,
which also like probably should have been disclosed to her before
Definitely.
Buying the house. But So a lifelong cat owner, Goliath said that she knows the signs a cat gives when it's approached by a person seeking to be scratched, saying that, and quote, "A cat will take the tail and put it straight, which is a sign of being happy, and then flush against my legs. I've had a cat, can confirm this is what they do when they're like want attention." On the day she moved in, her cat was at the foot of the same stairs that the Linnell children heard footsteps on in the 60s. She said that the cat watched something come down the stairs, though Goliath could not see it. When the invisible presence got to the bottom of the stairs, the cat approached and turned as if asking to be rubbed.
Ooh.
I totally think that
Animals
can see shit that we can't.
Absolutely. They can just sense so much more. They're just a lot more perceptive, I feel like.
Yes. While the cat has since passed away, Goliath says that one of her current four cats does the same greeting behavior 3 to 4 times a year, always at the staircase.
Four cats.
I know.
I love her.
She'll do it to whoever whoever our house guest is, she says, or whoever we're the house guest of.
Oh.
However, Goliath is not afraid of whoever the specter might be. She describes most of her experiences in the home being that of a grown woman's presence, which is warm and peaceful. So could this indeed be the ghost of Sally Flagg or her infant child? We might never know.
Wow.
But regardless, there is some sort of footless ghost haunting this house in Benton, Maine.
Yeah, I was going to say what's really interesting is, like, I mean, obviously we don't know what went on here, but the fact that, so they found like a baby's foot, but then they hear like the dragging footstep of like an older man. Mm-hmm. So that almost suggests to me like the spirit grew up. Like, I've never heard that before. So it's like, I mean, maybe this is all a conjecture, but like, that's kind of interesting.
It begs the question of if a spirit dies a certain age, do they stay at that same age forever?
Like, I always assumed.
If it's a ghost baby, is it always going to be a baby, or is it going to be like, will it develop the maturation of a grown-ass adult?
I mean, it's a great question. Was the foot definitely a baby's foot? It sounded
it was a five-month-old
baby, so,
which is quite small.
Very small.
I'm actually kind of shocked that I wish I could. There was a picture of the foot.
I would love to see it.
Well, because when I'm picturing like a mummified foot, I feel like it would be so small that I can't imagine being like, I guess maybe if you could like see toes and like fingernails.
Oh my God.
I guess it wouldn't be fingernails. They'd be toenails.
Yep. That's right. And also very sad if we.
Yeah. Hopefully if that baby.
What?
So we're totally assuming that the amputated foot is coming from a deceased child. Holy shit. So what if the foot was amputated when it was a baby, but that child still grew up in that house, dragging its stump leg around? Holy shit. I have chills.
Totally. Okay, we fucking solved it. Wow.
Wow.
I love when we solve it. That's so great.
Yeah. So like, I'm just like picturing like this like scorned woman, like living in this house with like her bastard child who maybe she can't even look at it anymore. She's like, you just remind me of your father.
Yes.
And he's like, I'm not my father.
And he has a peg leg.
He's got a peg leg, full on Tiny Tim fantasy.
Mm-hmm. And his last name is Flag. That's too bad. Mm.
I guess Tiny Tim just had polio.
Fantasy. we have to.
I think that's more likely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Hopefully the foot was amputated in a medical procedure, like out of necessity.
But I also hate like an in-home doctor surgery situation. There's nothing worse to me.
Yeah, it's gross.
Like a get out kind of situation.
Oh, yeah.
Ugh.
Oh, yeah.
And like an old-timey doctor, they don't know what they're doing.
Anesthetics weren't that cute back then.
No, they probably were like, give the baby some whiskey. He'll be
truly
fine.
They're like, get this baby fucking drunk and then let's party.
God. Great. I love an old ghost story like that.
Me too.
Thank you so much.
You're so welcome.
Oh my God. Thank you. Let's complain a little bit.
Let's complain.
And then we'll get the fuck out of here. I have a really stupid one this week, which we love. So I feel like I've talked about at least 2 to 3 times on this podcast that I just keep having experiences where my pants rip.
Ugh. Mm-hmm. Booty too big.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's out of control. But there was the one experience, I think it was like right at the start of this podcast, where I had these pants that I really liked and they kept ripping in the back and I kept trying to sew them up myself and then they would just rip more and I was really frustrated and I believe that I complained about that like in 2017. Perfect. And then...
Oh yeah, all your Zara pants.
Mm-hmm. And then, well, yes.
Oh.
Then last year...
This episode brought to you by Zara.
Not though, because their pants are terrible. And last year at work, I was on my way to work. My pants ripped again, like a huge, huge rip, to the point that I had to buy pants at lunch. One of my coworkers brought me leggings to put on because my ass was out. It was insane. And then this morning, I put these pants on, and I'm not going to show you graphically, but it's...
Oh, please do.
Like, do you see how they've just worn away? Like
that happens to me is like
hanging by threads.
Yeah.
And yes, they are the Zara pants. So here's the thing. Three pairs of pants I've had from Zara have all ripped. And the thing is that right before you got here, I ordered two more. So
I think you should maybe explore other stores, because I don't know if you know this.
No.
Other retail outlets exist.
I can't. So the thing is that, like, it's like, I really like these pants. So, like, they're really comfortable, stretchy. I know they fit. So I was just like, I'll just order some more. They'll last me a year. They'll rip again. I'm a fool and I love it. Go on, please.
So shocking that mine's going to be a Subway-related complaint, but in a very different way.
Classic.
So if you are not from New York and listening to this podcast, there's been a new kind of initiative where they're placing a lot more police in Subway stations to try and stop people who jump the turnstiles in the Subway. So if you're not from New York, I've never been to New York. If you've been on a Subway, you understand. You swipe your card, the turnstile moves. And there are these like large ones that kind of like encompass your whole body, which I really fucking hate.
I hate them.
And then there's smaller ones where you just like, you push with your pelvis and then it just like goes. So apparently for some reason, the city of New York thinks that like this is the largest problem that we have.
Definitely.
And our taxpayer money should go towards posting police officers to arrest these people who are jumping turnstiles. Have you noticed this?
To be honest, I've been taking the bus a lot more because I hate the subway so much. Well, because I live and work in Brooklyn, so it's like really easy for me to do that.
Yeah, drop your address.
Okay, great. it's the fare is like $2.75 at this point for one ride, which is actually kind of insane. So like,
it's super insane. Well, so my complaint isn't actually about subway jumpers, because it's the fact that this initiative, what it does is it targets people who do not have the money to pay for this really kind of insane amount for subway fare, which unfortunately tends to be people of color. And I've now seen three people get like arrested in subway stations and it's like,
you have nothing better to do.
You have nothing better to do, especially when this is the primary way to get around a very large metropolis.
Yeah.
And it's just, I think it's so fucked up. And it's like, maybe that money could go to like fixing the roads or, you know, improving our public school system or
even like replacing the fucking old ass trains that break down every day.
Just like so many things that taxpayer money could be better spent on than just like trying to get quote unquote like petty criminal crime. And just, it's so fucking stupid. And it just like breaks my heart where it's like, should he be jumping the turnstile? Like, probably not. But like, some people, like, they don't have $2.75
to spend a day
on anything, let alone just getting to and from wherever they need to go.
Right. It's also, I also will say that, like, as the winter is approaching, I mean, New York obviously has a huge homelessness problem, and a lot of people who don't have somewhere to live utilize the subway system to have somewhere to sleep that's not freezing cold.
It's so horrible.
And obviously those are people who aren't going to be able to pay the fare to get on. I did see someone posted about this, I think last winter, but if you live in a big city where you know that this is a problem, instead of, you know, just handing out cash, like if you want to buy a couple of extra Metro cards that have, you know, $20 on them and give that to someone who's sleeping on the street on a cold night.
That's a really good idea.
Like that just helps people to have somewhere to go. And I know it's like frowned upon for someone to just like sleep on the subway all night long, but like it's better than sleeping on the street when it's 0 degrees outside.
And you know, it's so easy to pass judgment on someone who is on the street or lives on the subway or like is begging for food or money. And just like, you know, we as New Yorkers have this very like glazed over tendency just to like shut out the world.
And you also, it's so frequent that you kind of have to, couldn't go about your life.
Yes. And I've definitely talked about this before, but I sometimes get like emotionally consumed where it's like, you know, I gave a couple dollars to a transgender woman on the street the other day. And then like, I passed someone else who's like with their child. How do I morally negotiate where my money goes? And sometimes it's really subjective. And sometimes it's just like how I'm feeling that certain day.
But, right.
I just think that it's really fucked up that is the way that we're choosing to finance something, which is like to get to stop something that's so, And then and they phrase it as like, oh, we can't improve the subways if people are jumping.
It's like, yeah, you can.
It's like,
it's actually a like, really okay. minor problem.
Yeah, like, okay.
Okay, sick. all right. So the country hasn't been fixed since the last time we recorded, which is just too bad. Shocking. So,
but hey, you know, impeachment could be on the horizon. You don't know. I'm very, yeah.
I'll be so curious to see how this, this podcast ages. If someone is listening to this, oh, like God. 2 years from now, yeah. Of us being like, jeez. Impeachment could be happening.
God, I can't even,
my God,
go down that road.
Yeah.
Well, thank you guys for listening. Yeah, you know, as we said at the top of this episode, you know, we do this because we love hanging out, but we do this also because we love mm-hmm. the fact that you guys appreciate us yeah. just shooting this shit.
Yeah.
So we hope that you'll come along with us to our new podcast, which we'll have more details on in the coming weeks.
Yeah. And let us know again, like message us, especially if you have any like questions, because I also feel like the top of this show is very kind of confusing and rambly and like a lot, we kind of shot a lot of details out at you. But the only thing to remember is just like, you know, we're obviously going to spend the month of October, spooky season, Halloween season with you guys. We can't wait to close out the podcast in this lively time of year. And there'll be more stuff for you for to come for you guys, but we'll let you know every step of the way. So,
yeah, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe. And, you know, regardless on if you join us to the new podcast, stay subscribed to us because we fully intend on dropping other content. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you never know, like, when we might just, like,
yeah,
pop back in. Oh, well,
okay.
Bye, bitches.